I'd like the ginger ale. I hadn't checked to see if it was loaded. What's up?
That crazy bitch Gavrilla is here. Maybe inside. She killed a little girl out front in order to distract the shoe guard at the gate.
Good grief. We don't have a soldier boy out front.
We do, but she patrols. Gavrilla waited until the soldier boy was on the opposite side of the compound. The way we've reconstructed it, she slashed up the child and threw her, dying, up against the sentry box door. When the shoe opened the door, she cut his throat and then dragged him across the box and used his handprint to open the inner door.
I had the pistol out and threw the deadbolt on the door.
Reconstructed? You don't know for sure? No way to tell. The inner door isn't monitored. But she did drag him back into the box, and if she's military, she knows how the handprint locks work.
I checked the pistol's magazine. 8 packs of tumblers. Each pack held 144 razor-sharp tumblers. Each, actually, a folded, scored piece of metal that shatters into 144 pieces when you pull the trigger. They come out in a hail of fury that can chew off an arm or a leg.
Now that she's in the compound, we don't know that for sure.
If she is, though, are there any more handprint locks? Any monitored entrances?
The main entrance is monitored. No handprints, just mechanical locks. My people are checking every door.
I winced a little at my people. Okay, we're secure here. Keep us posted.
Will do.
The console went dark. We both looked at the door.
Maybe she doesn't have anything that can get through that,
Amelia said.
She used a knife on the child and guard.
I shook my head. I think she did that for her own amusement. Gavrilla huddled in a cabinet under a laundry sink, waiting, the M31 cradled, ready to fire, and the guard's assault rifle digging into her ribs. She had come in through a service door that was open to the night air and locked it behind her. While she watched through a crack, her patience and foresight were rewarded. A soldier boy slipped silently up to the door, checked the lock, and moved on. After 1 minute, she got out and stretched. She had to either find out where the woman was staying, or find some way to destroy the whole building. But fast. She was ridiculously outnumbered, and in gaining the advantage of terror, she had sacrificed the possibility of surprise. There was a beat-up keyboard and console, gray plastic turning white with some kind of soap film, built into the wall. She went over to it and pushed a random letter, and it turned itself on. She typed in directory, and was rewarded with a list of personnel. Blaze Harding wasn't there, but Julian Class was, at 8-1841. That looked like a phone number, rather than a room number. Guessing, she rolled a pointer over to his name and clicked on it. That gave her 241, more useful. It was a two-story building. A sudden loud rattling startled her. She spun around, pointing both weapons, but it was just an unattended washing machine that had been dormant while she was hidden. She ignored the freight elevator and shouldered through a heavy fire exit door that opened on a dusty staircase. There didn't seem to be any security cameras. She climbed quickly and quietly up to the second floor. She thought for a moment, and left one of the weapons by the door on the landing. She only needed one for the kill. Besides, she'd be retreating fast, and might want an element of surprise. They would know she had the guard's assault rifle, but probably didn't know about the M31 yet. Opening the door a crack, she could see that the odd-numbered rooms were across from her, numbers increasing to the right. She closed her eyes for a deep breath and a silent prayer, and then burst through the door in a dead run, assuming there were cameras and soldier boys in her near future. There were neither. She stopped at 241, took a fraction of a second to note the class nameplate, leveled the assault rifle,
and fired a silenced burst at the lock. The door didn't open. She aimed 6 inches higher, and this time blew out the deadbolt. The door opened a couple of inches, and she kicked it the rest of the way. Julian was standing there in the shadow, holding the pistol straight out with both hands. She spun away instinctively as he fired, and the burst of razors that would have beheaded her instead just tore out a piece of her left shoulder. She fired 2 random blasts into the darkness, trusting God to guide them, not to him, but to the white scientist she was there to punish, and leaped back out of the way of his second shot. Then she sprinted back to the stairwell and just got through the door as his third shot redecorated the hall. There was a soldier boy waiting there, hulking huge at the top of the stairs. She knew from picking Jefferson's mind that the mechanic controlling it probably had been brainwashed so it couldn't kill her. She emptied the rest of the magazine into the thing's eyes. The black man was shouting for her to throw out her weapon and come out with her hands up. All right. He was probably the only thing between her and the scientist. She towed the door open, ignoring the soldier boy groping blindly behind her, and threw out the useless assault rifle. "Now come out slowly," the man said. She took 1 moment to visualize her move while she eased back the arming lever of the M-31. Shoulder rolled across the corridor, and then a continuous sweeping burst in his direction. She leaped. It was all wrong. He got her before she hit the ground, an ungodly pain in her belly. She saw her own death happening, a thick spray of blood and entrails as her shoulder hit the floor, and she tried to complete the roll, but just slid. She managed to get up on her knees and elbows, and something slimy fell out of her body. She fell over facing him, and through a darkening haze raised the weapon toward him. He said something, and then the world ended. I shouted, "Drop it!" But she ignored me, and the second shot disintegrated her head and shoulders. I fired again reflexively, blowing apart the M-31 and the hand that was aiming it, and turning her chest into a bright red cavity. Behind me, Amelia made a choking sound and ran to the bathroom to vomit. I had to stare. She didn't even look human from the waist up, just a messy montage of butchered meat and rags. The rest of her was unaffected. For some reason, I held up my hand to block out the gore and was a little horrified to see that her lower body was in a relaxed, casually seductive pose. A soldier boy slowly pushed the door open. The sensory apparatuses were a chewed-up mess. "Julian?" it said in Candy's voice. "I can't see. Are you all right?" "I'm okay, Candy. I think it's over. Backup coming?" "Claude, he's downstairs." "I'll be in the room." I walked back through the door on automatic pilot. I almost meant it when I said I was okay. I just turned a human being into a pile of steaming meat. Hey, all in a day's work. Amelia had left the water running after washing her face. She hadn't quite made it to the toilet and was trying to clean up the mess with a towel. I set down the pistol and helped her to her feet. "You lie down, honey. I'll take care of this." She was weeping. She nodded into my shoulder and let me guide her to the bed. After I cleaned up and threw the towels into the recycler, I sat on the end of the bed and tried to think. But I couldn't get past the horrible sight of the woman bursting open 3 times each time I pulled the trigger. When she silently threw the rifle out, for some reason, I knew she would come through the door shooting. I had a sight picture and the trigger halfway pulled when she leaped out into the corridor. I'd heard a pattering sound, which must have been her silenced weapon, blinding Candy. And then when she threw it out without hesitation, I guess I assumed it was empty and she had another weapon. But the way I felt it as I eased down on the trigger and waited for her to show herself, I had never felt that way in the soldier boy. Ready. I really wanted her to come out and die. I really wanted to kill her. Had I changed that much in a few weeks? Or was it actually change? The boy was a different case, an industrial accident that I didn't completely cause, and if I could bring him back, I would. I wouldn't bring Gavrilla back, except to kill her again. For some reason, I remembered my mother and her rage when President Brenner was assassinated. I was 4. She hadn't liked Brenner at all, I learned later, and that made it worse, as if she had some complicity in the crime, as if the murder were some kind of wish fulfillment. But that wasn't close to the personal hate I felt for Gavrilla. Besides, she was almost not human. It was like disposing of a vampire who was single-mindedly stalking the woman you loved. Amelia was quiet now. "I'm sorry you saw that. It was pretty awful." She nodded, face still buried in the pillow.
"At least it's over. That part's over."
I rubbed her back and murmured agreement. We didn't know how Gavrilla, like the vampire, was going to return from her grave to kill again. In the Guadalajara airport, Gavrilla had written a short note to General Blaisdell and put it in an envelope with his home address. She put that in another envelope addressed to her brother, with instructions to send it on unread if Gavrilla didn't call by tomorrow morning. This is what it said. "If you haven't heard from me by now, I'm dead. The man in charge of the group that killed me is M.G. Stanton Roser, the most dangerous man in America. An eye for an eye. Gavrilla." After she had sent that one, she realized it wasn't enough, and on the plane, she scribbled another 2 pages, trying to set down everything she could remember from the minutes when she'd been able to see into Jefferson's mind. Luck was on the other side for that one, though. She dropped it in a mailbox in the canal zone, and it was automatically routed through Army intelligence, where a bored tech sergeant read part of it and recycled it as crank mail. But she hadn't been the only one on the wrong side who had been exposed to the plan. Lieutenant Thurman heard of Gavrilla's death a few minutes after it happened, and put 2 and 2 together, and changed into his dress uniform and slipped out into the night. He got by the sentry box with no problem. The shoe who had been pressed into service to replace the one Gavrilla had murdered was just this side of catatonic. He passed Thurman through with a rigid salute. He didn't have any money for a commercial flight, so he had to gamble on using the military. If the wrong person asked for his travel orders, or if he had to go through a retinal scan for security, that would be it. Not just AWOL, but fleeing from administrative detention. A combination of luck and bluff and planning worked, though. He got off the base just by getting aboard a supply chopper that was returning to the canal zone. He knew that the CZ had been in bureaucratic chaos for months, ever since it had seceded from Panama and become a U.S. territory. The Air Force base there was not exactly overseas, and not exactly stateside either. He waitlisted himself on a flight to Washington, misspelling his name, and a half hour later flashed his picture ID and rushed aboard. He arrived at Andrews Air Force Base at dawn, had a big free breakfast at the transient officer's mess, and then loitered around until 9:30. Then he called General Blaisdell. Lieutenant's bars don't move you through the Pentagon's switchboards very fast. He told 2 civilians, 2 sergeants, and a fellow lieutenant that he had a personal message for General Blaisdell. Finally, he wound up with a bird colonel, who was his administrative assistant. She was an attractive woman a few years older than Thurman. She eyed him suspiciously. "You're calling from Andrews," she said. "But my board says you're stationed in Portobello."